This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. For more talk about last night's primaries, record fundraising by Team Obama, and other political news, we've got Donna Brazile, a Democratic strategist and author of a nationally syndicated column, plus Robert Trainum, the D.C. Bureau Chief for the Comcast Cable Network, CN8. Hey, folks.
Hi there.
So let's talk, Robert, about last night. You know, a huge victory for Hillary Clinton in Kentucky, less of a win for Obama in Oregon. One thing I brought up with Ron Elving is of NPR is whether or not we can see any trends in terms of how white voters vote based on the population, how many African Americans there are in states. Do you think that that makes a difference in how things play out among white voters?
Well, it sure does. I mean, it depends. I mean, obviously, states like Kentucky and Oregon have lower African American populations. However, states like Pennsylvania, as well as Ohio and some other states that Senator Clinton has won, have significantly large African-American populations. So to make the argument that Senator Obama has a structural problem right now with some blue-collar white Americans, that is factually correct in certain states, to be very clear. In states like Pennsylvania, in states like Ohio, in states where proportionally either A, white middle-class Americans that are Democrat voted for Senator Clinton, and or B, in the exit polling, they had said, assuming that they were telling the truth, that they in fact either A, have an issue with Senator Obama's race, and or B, feel that Senator Clinton is a much more better and or stronger candidate. Now, you can go down the road as to what that means. But yes, I mean, in some states, there is an issue that Senator Obama has to fix between now and November.
Donna, how do you think that race and gender and class are playing out in a matrix? I know that's a huge question, but do you see any trends that you can point to?
Yes and no. First of all, Senator Obama has done very well with white voters across the broad spectrum. He's had trouble in certain regions of the country where perhaps for socioeconomic reasons, voters tend to go with the familiar, meaning the Senator Clinton. But I think overall, Senator Obama has done quite well with the white vote. When you consider that John Kerry, Al Gore, and even Bill Clinton had trouble attracting white male voters. Still, in Bill Clinton's case, he was able to win the presidency twice. Al Gore, he won the popular vote in 2000, and 2004 was a very close election. I would argue that Obama doesn't have a quote-unquote white problem. Obama has a regional problem in winning certain states in Appalachia that may not be as attractive to his message of change in a new direction than they are, say, in other parts of the country. Senator Obama would not be leading right now in both the pledge delegates and superdelegates had he not been able to capture a large segment of the white vote. And according to the Los Angeles Times on May 8th, in terms of the national poll, Senator Obama is behind Senator John McCain only 4 points. Senator McCain has 45% of the white vote, Senator Obama 41. So, and 41, if you can get 41% of the white vote as a Democrat, since the Democratic Party has not won the white vote since 1964, you can win the election.
Robert, how do you read the tea leaves on the whole seating issue of Michigan and Florida in the Democratic system?
Well, it's a mess. I mean, there's no question about it that it's a mess. I mean, obviously, a lot of people out there will try to put some lipstick on the pig. But the fact of the matter is that millions of people in Michigan and Florida, despite what their state legislator did, despite what, you know, the delegates or whatever the case that the DNC did, these folks came out and voted. And by default, they have now been disenfranchised. Now, the question becomes is whether or not the Democratic National Committee, the Rules Committee, the Credentials Committee and so forth will be able to sit down sometime next week and say, OK, we know that you broke the rules. You explicitly were told not on more than one occasion that if, in fact, you move up your primary, you will not be seated at the convention. Now that the tea leaves, if you will, Farai, are coming home to roost, hopefully there will be some type of a compromise where at least maybe half of the delegates will be seated, whatever the case may be. The issue really is and it's a little tricky, is because, to be fair, in Michigan, Senator Obama, Clinton, Dodd, and so forth were all asked to remove their names from the ballot. They had a choice as to whether or not to stay on the ballot or to remain on the ballot. Senator Obama obviously chose to stay off the ballot. Senators Clinton, Dodd chose to stay on the ballot. In Florida, it's a little bit of a different story because that's clearly where the Republican state legislature decided to play little games with the Democrats and decided to move their delegation or move their primary up. So it's a bit of a shell game that's going on. But the fact of the matter is, despite whatever argument you may hear out there, millions of people out there did vote, and they in fact feel that they have been disenfranchised because their votes, quote unquote, are not being counted, which runs counter to the argument that the Democrats obviously ran on and certainly campaigned on from 2000 to the present.
Donna, there's a Rules Committee meeting on May 31st. Do you think, as someone who works with the DNC, do you think that there's going to be a public announcement right after that saying what's going on?
Well, let me just say in full disclosure, I'm a member of the Rules and Bylaws Committee as well, appointed 10 years ago, and that's what makes me a superdelegate as well.
Donna is a superwoman.
No, we know that. Yeah,
I'm just a hardworking person. Let me just say this: that the Republican National Committee also penalized those two states for violating its rules on time, and their penalty was 50% of delegates. Our penalty was 100% of all delegates. We were trying to send the most strongest possible message that we did not want any state to hold their contest in the calendar year 2007. We will, on May 31st in Washington, D.C., in a public meeting that hopefully will be televised on C-SPAN and other cable outlets, we will reconsider our penalty in light of what Robert said, that the voters should not be penalized. We will give a fair settlement to both states, irregardless of the candidates who might be leading, who might be behind. We will come up with a fair recommendation to the body, and I hope that the 48 states that comply with the rules will accept our resolution, and we can go forward toward the convention unified as one party.
All right, Donna, I'm going to stick with you for a second. We heard Hillary Clinton address sexism yesterday. She called for equal treatment of sexism and racism. She also blamed the press for failing to take on misogynists. And she seemed to reach out to women in her speech last night. So as a black woman, as I am, how do you think sexism plays out and racism? I mean, are the ways that they're expressed apples and oranges, or are they playing out similarly with the two candidates, but in, you know, obviously racism on one hand, sexism on the other?
I think, first of all, there's been both. And this has been a historic campaign season with two unconventional candidates, one woman, one black man. There's no question that sexism as well as racism have reared their ugly heads once again. Subtle forms, but still, of course, they are part of the undercurrents in American politics. But to somehow suggest that sexism or racism alone has defined this moment, when in fact the two finals are people who traditionally don't get to the finals. So I think we need to look at and not just the ugly forms of racism and sexism that I've seen throughout the campaign season, whether we're questioning whether or not Obama is black enough and then he's too black and spent 6 weeks talking about if he's as angry as his minister, or is he, is he out of the mainstream, a patriot, or some of the ugly misogynistic terminology used to characterize Senator Clinton's clothes, her hair, her sound of her voice. There's no question that we've seen both in this race. But I also think that we need to celebrate this moment. This has been a historic election season, record turnout, record participation, record amount of money raised, and that is because we have two equally qualified candidates running for the office, and there's no reason to stir up any additional resentment. Let's talk about racism, let's talk about sexism, but let's also talk about the characters of the candidates and see if we can come up with the best candidate to defeat John McCain in the fall.
Robert, I'm going to turn to money, which is something Donna just mentioned. The Obama supporters are still emptying out their wallets. They, have emptied them out to the point where he has $37 million in the bank compared to a deficit for Senator Clinton, and Senator McCain has $22 million in the bank. He didn't raise the most money this month, but overall he has raised the most money of any candidate. So are we going to see Senator McCain pulling up financially? Because he raised nearly $18 million in April, which was his best month yet. Are we going to start seeing the Republican candidate pulling up in the money game?
There's no question about it that, first of all, let me just back up and say that this year has been, or this presidential cycle has been, an absolutely fascinating money race just to watch. Senator Obama, to date, has raised $272 million. Senator Clinton has raised $221 million to date. And Senator McCain, to date, has raised about $100 million. If you take a look, first of all, this will probably be the first billion-dollar election ever. That's number one. But also number two, to answer your question specifically, Farai, there's one person out there, despite his, you know, low approval rating and so forth, say whatever you want about him, he is a prolific fundraiser on the campaign trail, and that's George W. Bush. Starting next week on the 27th and the 28th, the president's going to be in Utah raising money for the RNC as well as for Senator McCain. Also on the 28th, former Governor Mitt Romney is going to be rattling the cage for the Mormon community for John McCain and a joint fundraiser. So behind the scenes, President Bush is going to work like the Dickens to make sure that Senator McCain has the resources to be able to defeat Barack Obama in the fall. That's one. Also, two, the RNC, the Republican National Committee, has more cash on hand, about $40 million cash on hand, compared to the Democrats, who I believe has about $20 million cash on hand. So look to those two arms to really help not only Senator McCain, but also Senator Obama as well. There's no question about it that both of these candidates will have enough resources to compete in the fall.
All right, Donna.
Can I make a little news? The DNC has announced a combined fundraising operation with the Team Obama, Team Clinton. And next month in June, my former boss, Al Gore, will be the featured guest at the first combined fundraising event featuring Hillary and Barack donors. So I'm excited about that. The party's coming together. It's been a long campaign season, but I can see the end in sight.
And Al Gore has not been very present in this campaign. So this is a big step for him to kind of get in the mix.
I've been waiting to see that Nobel Prize. So I'm looking forward to seeing Al Gore out there.
All right. Well, that's all we have time for today. Thank you guys so much.
Thanks, Farai.
We've been talking politics with Donna Brazile, a Democratic strategist and author of a nationally syndicated column, and Robert Trainum, the D.C. bureau chief for the Comcast cable network CNN. They both joined us from NPR's headquarters in Washington, D.C.